Welcome to episode 56 of The Summoned, a podcast dedicated to the Judgment Eternal Champions miniatures games. I'm one of your hosts, David Coakley, a.k.a. Fabius Bile on the Discord. And as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host right next to me here, David Wonky, Wonky Kong. And how are you doing this evening, Wonky?
Oh, doing good. Just getting used to that new dad life still.
I was going to say that I'm sure that's an adjustment.
Yep, still an adjustment, but it's going good.
Good. Lots of sleepless nights ahead of you, right?
We kind of rotate, so it's not too bad, which makes it not as bad. But
that's
also helps. We're also both currently still off work, right? So we're able to kind of work around it. So when we both go back to work, that's going to be when it's going to get a lot more interesting, we'll say.
Absolutely. So, well, I know, Wonky, we've talked a little bit, and we have a fairly packed episode that we wanted to do tonight. So, as always, let's jump into the first segment of the night, which is Hobby Corner! All right, Wonky, I'm going to ask, any updates on your end?
No. I do have models to build from Warfare Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably will hopefully work on that soon.
Okay.
So I've got
to be clear, that's what? Yorgoth Styx and...
Yorgoth Styx, Lurabella, and I think I have a Terra?
Okay.
Maybe? I know I've got those three, and I thought I had one more thing.
Okay.
Did
you pick up any extra model that was a big model, or...?
No, I didn't get anything big. Just Judgment stuff.
Okay.
So I got to get those builds. I mean, I use Lori every game as a gruel player because I've been getting a few games in lately. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's been kind of fun. So okay. Anytime I play gruel, I play Lurabella, but I've got a V1 Lurabella, so I, you know, when I'm playing on the table, at least I have that.
Right.
But with, you know, playing on Vassal, it doesn't quite matter as much, obviously. So,
don't
need to have the model built. But yeah, Lurabella is a true favorite of mine, anyone knows. So I do want to get my V2 version of her built and probably get her to the painter at some point. But we'll see on that one. But yeah, I just got some models to build. I'm also going to be looking at trying to build some terrain soon. So I want to do some spoiler for future episode. I want to look at doing some ways to do some 2D terrain for stuff that's more transportable.
Okay.
For event running and, you know, game nights at a store. And because I love the 3D terrain. And even the mushroom stuff's grown on me a lot, especially seeing it painted.
Right.
It's helped me actually like the mushroom terrain a lot more.
Okay.
But transporting a table or multiple tables worth of 3D terrain easily is not the most convenient thing to do.
It's challenging.
And I don't think the 2D terrain that was done previously is going to happen again. From some rumblings I've heard on the Discord. So there was some those early MDF 2D terrain packs, but I don't think those are coming back.
Gotcha.
At least there's not anything in that vein coming from that same vendor.
Okay.
From my understanding. So so trying to figure that out. So that'll be something that I'll probably start tinkering with soonish. And then I kind of hope to do, you know, a podcast with you on that and kind of some thought process and stuff on it. Because I think that would be a very useful thing for the community.
Would make sense.
So that's a lot of rambling for I've literally done nothing. Fabius, what is on your hobby table that you're currently working on?
Well, I still have yet to build my Lori Styx or Yorgoth either. Okay. So you're not behind on that.
I'm not the only slacker.
Correct. You're not the only slacker. However, I have gotten painting done, and I actually started working on my Brock, my 2D, as I call him, my Chopathon Brock.
Chopathon?
Yeah, he's my Chopathon Brock, because he's got, when I was gluing him originally, his axe busted.
Okay.
So I had to literally, I took it, shortened it down, so he's got his axe in his left hand as a short little axe. And then I gave him the one of the plague demon's cleavers in his right hand.
Okay, so he's got two choppers. I got it. No,
yeah. So he's he's my chop-a-thon Brock, you know. But I'm toying around with some colors on him, seeing how I like him. I'm not entirely sure, but I've started using some of the new Cuttlefish Genesis paints. And they have actually been a wonderful tool to work with. Like, I did literally one coat of the, I think it's called Georgia Summer, and it's a really nice bright skin tone that I can start adding some shading to and continuing into some of the other colors that I've gotten from Cuttlefish. To do some nice shade work and such. So it's been nice to do that. And then besides him, I actually went and did something that I, that was completely contrast to my original V1 version, which was I started working on a Zyvera. That is very bright colored.
Whoa, she's like an evil necromancer and you're making her bright colored?
Yeah, like her robe is actually bright fucking, like, orange. Yeah, like, in at points it looks almost traffic cone orange. I'm actually making her very bright colored. So it's like I said, it's a change from where she normally is, because normally I think a lot of people see her, like you said, as this evil necromancer style character, which I'm not saying she isn't, but I'm painting her up in just brighter tones, seeing what I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to look different than a lot of other Zyveras, I'm assuming. Quite a few of the Zyveras you see out there will be, you know, more of the, you know, the normal veins of necromancers, you know, the darker colors and, you know, things of that nature.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, so I'm very, very, very pleased with how that model has turned out.
Well, that's good. And you're just working on those two?
Yeah, those are the main two I've been working on right now. That's just partially because I've been so busy with my work that I just haven't had a lot of time to sit down and really start doing anything in major. But I know I need to, once I get done with them, I need to switch gears and go back towards my Tomas list. Because I need to finish up the, I need to finish up Maltique and Fazeel to get that done.
Yeah, I mean, having a Fazeel done, if you like playing Tomas, is probably a good idea. Maltique, it's a little more hit or miss. But good thing about Maltique is she can go to any god as a champion, so it does kind of, does allow you to, you know, hey, I got this one done. Okay, any god, I can use that now.
Correct.
I'm trying to play it painted, so calculated, right? Calculated.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, that's kind of what my hobby desk has been up to, or hobby corner lately. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Nice. No, it's good to hear. It's good to see that you're getting some, get some painting going again. I feel like it's been a little bit, so.
It has, you know, with doing the like five models out of my seven models, for Warfare Weekend, plus then playing and then getting back from that and getting going right into holiday season, has definitely taken a toll on my hobby.
Yeah.
So it's good to finally be stretching that again.
Nice.
So, well, all right. I think that's a good update for both of our hobby corners. So let's move right into Judgment News. Because I know tonight we actually have some events to be talking about. So what's our first one, Wookie?
All right. So the first one is LVO. So LVO is coming up January 18th through the 21st. So LVO is the Las Vegas Open. It's held at the Rio Casino in Vegas. It's a really massive 40K event. When I was at LVO last year, I think it was like over 900 some players in the 140K tournament, which is still mind-boggling to me. Yeah, I mean, it's like a 4-day tournament or five, like it's wild how many people. There are a bunch of other game systems there. I didn't really wander around to see how big the other game systems were when I was there last year, but we did have some couple small judgment events, and it's a con that Creature Caster goes to. So they're running judgment events again this year. So they've got a single, so LVO, you have to pay per event, but it's a single ticket for the judgment event. So it's $40 for like the judgment weekend pass or whatever you want to call it. Okay. Doesn't say how many seats they have for it, so I don't know how they do that. Because I know like Adeptcon and Warfare Weekend actually tells you like how many are left.
Right.
I don't see that on LVO, so maybe you can buy them until it caps out. So I have no idea what the cap is, essentially. So, but yeah, so they've got a $40 thing for 3 days of judgment. First up on Fridays is a threes style event, according to the title. And what's currently, they've got a very general packet out. It will be veto style.
Okay.
With chess clocks. Should be pretty much, if you've been to any of the conventions last year, a lot of it should be
similar.
Pretty similar.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's threes veto on Friday. There is a fives veto on Saturday. And then Sunday, it just mentions that there is more casual stuff. There's talk about doing some free-for-all stuff or possibly a narrative event is mentioned for that. So that's more of just a free play kind of thing. I don't know what exactly structure style will be used. So yeah, that will be LVO. Have you ever made out to LVO before, or is that one you haven't been out to before?
That is one that I have not been out to before. It is a hope of mine that eventually one of these years I'll get to go to one of these cons, end up actually getting into the, you know, top arena and get a ticket out to, like, get my qualifier for LVO, since that's where they want to kind of move the chain act to.
Yeah, so that should be the thing I'll call it here. So LVO is the plan for where the invitational will take place. So the 2024 tournament or 2023 tournament season, or sorry, no, 2024.
No, it would be
2024. 2023. Okay. So the 2024 tournament season will have its invitational at LVO 2025.
Yep.
And I think it will be kind of the unofficial, like, release of the tournament packet, like, that will be for the year as well. But it's not the actual, like, kickoff of it, even though it does kind of mention it as the season kickoff. It will be the kickoff, at least from the tournament packet perspective, but any of the scoring and pointing and rankings and any of that stuff will not be the, like, the LVO thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, the base rules stuff will get released, and then
makes sense.
So the actual kickoff is the next con we're going to talk about, which is Adepticon. And I'll put a really quick caveat: there is also Captain Con that falls in between these two things. I'm just not familiar with it enough that I don't know, so I guess I could do a little research and call that out. But yeah, there is Captain Con. I think it runs a little bit after LVO, maybe. And that's out on the East Coast somewhere. And I think they will have some events. I think some of the Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania guys are going to be there. And I think there's a couple of East Coast players, I think. So I think there will be something at Captain Con, but okay, I'm not entirely sure.
So I found the dates, if we want to call that out. Captain Con is going to be from February 2nd through February 4th.
Okay.
So it's pretty much like two weekends after.
Yeah, two weekends after LVO. Yeah. And I there was some discussion about having some stuff there. I don't know if there's going to be any official events there, but there is people that have been discussing it on the Discord. So I'm assuming there might be some, at least some random like pick up and play type stuff.
I can see that.
So, but yeah, so then that leads us to Adepticon. So Adepticon is going to be March 20th through the 24th.
Yep.
It will be the official kickoff of the tournament season. So this will be the first, your first opportunity to qualify. I'm assuming there'll be some, like if you win Adepticon, you'll qualify probably.
Yeah, that's kind of what I remember Guns and Tirith talking about. Multiple times before, and even when we had them on for the the special episode, is it was basically the winners of like Adepticon or you know, some of the bigger cons that are going to be going on, they will get an automatic
an automatic bid
for a spot at LVO Invitational.
Yeah, so those that aren't super familiar, I guess we should maybe hit the high level of the intent of the tournament season. So the tournament season, the plan is to run from Adepticon through Warfare Weekend, and then the Invitational will then take place at LVO the following year, which is always in that. I think it's almost always that third weekend in January is when it's scheduled in Vegas. So the idea is you'll play in events throughout that tournament season. You will either auto-qualify, depending on how you place in those events, or you'll earn points, I believe. And then it will be, you know, X amount of people auto-qualify, X amount of people will be, you know, like the top X point getters that didn't auto-qualify will make it. And then there was, again, some of this is speculation because we have not seen the full, you know, Invitational rule set.
Right.
And then there's also some thought that there will be there might be a last chance qualifier where at LVO one of the event days will be a tournament where if you win it or the X number of spots will fill from the last chance qualifier.
Makes sense.
So so yeah, that's kind of a rough thing. And then I believe if it's like the old JNAC, if you run local events that have enough players, they can also be events that can earn points. I think it's where that's going to be a bit of a flux situation. You know, the first year or two as the game grows, as you know, metas build and whatnot. So, I would assume there'll be some random point events throughout outside of some of the conventions. But Adepticon's the big kickoff. Warfare Weekend is like this, almost the finale until the Invitational.
Yep.
I believe there's one or two other cons.
I mean, Gen Con happens.
Yeah, Gen Con. And I think Nova, they ran events at this year.
So and Nova then there might probably even be Origin.
Yeah, and I think they do PAX, but I don't know if PAX has a lot of like gaming tournaments. They went to PAX, I think, as well. So anyways, there'll be some of the cons where you'll auto-qualify. There will be some situations where you can earn points. They're also building out some sort of a ranking system. I'm not entirely sure how that will work. Just that it, you know, it won't, your Longshanks rating won't matter for those that track Longshanks ratings. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I did look at Captain Con just to double check it. They do have a 3v3 event currently that is beginner friendly.
Nice. So there'll be some judgment presence at Captain Con. All right, yeah, so DepCon, March 20th through 24th. There are two events on the books. There is a Friday threes event. This will start at 9 a.m. I believe was the start time. I might have to double check that. There are 24 seats for this event. We had 16, I think, for threes last year.
16 for threes last year.
Yep, so 16 for threes last year. I think it was also on Thursday, which I think impacted a couple of people because they like, I think they flew in on Thursday or something.
Yeah.
So this year we are on Friday for the threes event, so that should help. So 24 seats. And then we have a fives event on Saturday with 32 seats with an 8 a.m. start time. So we'll have two events there. I think last year our fives event was like 20 or 22 people or something. We had pretty good turnout, I felt like, for the fives event last year. Mm-hmm. Full rule sets for that should be released in the next week to 2 weeks, from my understanding, with some conversations I've had, because I'm running the events. So, but I'm not writing the tournament packet, because again, this will be the first events for the Invitational.
Right.
So, I don't know if threes will grant points or qualify you for the Invitational. It might just be fives. We don't know.
Yep.
So that will be something that will be interesting when we get those packets.
Yep.
But yeah, so we should get the pack in the next week or two. Obviously, Christmas is coming up. Mm-hmm. Might impact that a little bit. But I would hope by end of year or very early in January, we will have tournament packets.
Yeah, I would hope so.
The big thing we need to call about Adepticon,
which we've been calling it out all year as we've been doing this.
Yeah. Adepticon is fully painted required. Last year, we got a waiver because the game was like essentially soft releasing or launching at Adepticon for retail, basically. However, the game has now been around for a year, and painting required is an Adepticon staple. Comes back from the days of Adepticon being only a 40, I think it was only a 40K thing.
That's how it started. Yeah.
So, and GW is big on the hobby portion of stuff. So you do need to be painted. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the painting requirements are going to be. Some of it's going to end up being, I think, probably at my discretion.
Probably.
You know, look like you attempted to paint it. Don't slap three stripes of color randomly on the chest of your Brock. Call it a tribal tattoo and that he's painted.
I wish you wouldn't say things like that, just for one reason. Because I know for a fact that somebody out there has done something like that at some point on models, because I've seen it.
I've seen some pictures from some 40K Age of Sigmar events where they literally just, like, the model's gray and they did, like, a stripe of three, you know, one stripe.
A stripe of red, a stripe of blue, a stripe of this.
And they just did that, and they're like, it's painted. And I'm like, I will be the first to say I'm not the biggest fan of painting requirements, obviously by my aversion to picking up a paintbrush. It's well known.
It is.
The nice thing about Judgment, though, is it is a smaller set of models.
Yep.
So it's, I feel like it's not as big of a deal. It's not like a 40K army where you're painting up, like big tanks and like 30 Marines or,
But I mean, the other thing about it is that, I'm going to say, if you're not a painter, fine. Do exactly what you do, right? Find somebody who is, commission them for their time. Have them paint them for you. Just plan ahead. That makes the most sense to me.
Or the other thing is contrast paints.
I mean, yeah, if you are any type of, I'm not even going to say decent painter. If you are any type of person who understands being able to put a contrast paint on and let it do half your work for you because you zenithaled it, cool.
Yeah.
If you don't, come talk to somebody. There's so many of us out there that are so willing to help with that.
Yeah, like my brother, what was he saying? He did one of, I think it was his cane. Mm-hmm. He did in like 20 minutes with contrast paints.
Yeah.
And like, when you look up real close, like, okay, it's not the world's greatest painted model.
Yeah.
But from like arm's length, like looking at a table.
It looks fine.
It ain't bad. And I think he did one of them. And now, Graham, my brother's, he's gone pretty good. Like, he's used a lot of contrast paint. So, like, part of it's the, he's used them a bunch.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn how to, like, because there's some tricks to them.
There are some tricks, yeah.
So the painting required thing, just, we'll keep calling it out every time we talk about Adepticon, because it's going to be a thing. And I really, really don't want to have to turn people away for not having painted models.
Yep.
But I also don't know how stringent Adepticon actually is in policing that. But I'd rather not get our game system in trouble for not following the rules. Correct. Because, yeah, kind of don't want to set that precedent or impression with organizers.
Not just that. It also, to me, it also makes sense that you want to kind of establish that as a full frontal thing as a whole, mm-hmm. especially if you are going to have a tournament season.
Mm-hmm,
because correct. That's a thing that you know should want across the board
yep.
to hold. So it's like, yeah, I'm, mm-hmm. it sucks because if somebody goes to Adepticon right and picks up the box,
correct.
There, it's like, oh, okay, they really can't play unless they want to go grab some paints and work on it for the mm-hmm. next 45 to, you know, hour. Because like you said, real quick contrast paint, boom.
Yeah. And I'll actually, I probably need to double check Adepticon's rule for it just to make mm-hmm. sure I'm aware of what they're, because they might have requirements too for painting, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because last year we didn't have to, like, first off, the Galea brothers ran the event, so I played in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, didn't have to think about that. And obviously we had a waiver. So, yeah, so that's painting. We'll keep bringing it up. Yep. And we'll keep hammering it home every time we talk about Adepticon, because yep. probably every podcast we'll keep talking about Adepticon.
Yeah, I mean, considering it'll be here in a little over 3 months.
Correct. Yeah, and I guess the last big thing to mention about Adepticon is registration goes live January 7th.
Yep.
So, I know, I mean, based on what we had last year, we could get close to filling the events. I mean, I have no idea. Like I said, we had 16, I believe, last year for threes. So we have 8 more seats than that for this year. And then we have about 12-ish, I think, more seats. 12-ish more seats than we had people last year for fives. But the game has kind of hit a lot more people at this point. So mm-hmm. I don't know what that means for Adepticon tournaments. So I would probably be... pretty quick on the registration yep. if you're planning on playing in either of the two events. I don't know what time it goes live on January 7th. That I did not see.
I believe it's usually about noon Central Standard, I believe.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find that. Because I remember I saw when... It went live. Let's see. Hunting. Nope. Registration opens 1 p.m. CST.
Okay, so 1 p.m.
So that's when it did. 7. That's when it went live last year. So I would assume it'll go live the same. Because they haven't posted anything yet for this year about it specifically that I've seen. If they have, it maybe on Facebook. So,
yeah, it just says that it goes live on the 7th in the cart preview thing. So,
yeah. So I would assume 1 p.m.
Noon or 1, I think, would probably be when it will go live. I think they had some issues with some of it last year with the cart stuff being a problem. I think so. Yeah.
But anyway.
So anyways, that's Adepticon. I'm looking forward to it. I love Adepticon. It's wild. It's crazy. It's huge. It's funny. It's so funny for me going from like Warfare, which is definitely a much smaller.
Oh yeah.
Like a smaller, more like intimate convention to Adepticon. That's just like multitudes larger.
Yes. I mean, for me, it's a blast because, you know, you get to see more people that you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
But it does feel like a lot of the times at Adepticon, you're constantly on the move, right?
Yeah. It's packed. A lot of people. Yeah. It's busy.
Whereas Warfare, it's more laid back. You can, you know, spend some more time hanging out with people, really getting to talk, right?
You can leave the hotel and park when you return.
Right.
Because parking at Adepticon is horrendous. Yeah, they might be doing like the two hotels situation too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. So hopefully we'll be in there.
Hopefully we'll be in the main convention.
Yeah.
Location, because I heard the shuttles for the offsite were kind of a mess last year, so
wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so we'll have to see how that goes.
All right. Well, I think I think that's a good chunk about Adepticon. We covered everything we need to there. Mm-hmm. So then let's talk about the last thing in Judgment news, which is obviously, guys, we've had map submissions going out for a long time, because if you didn't know, let's announce that now to make sure people do know. There are tools within the Vassal module to build a 5v5 map currently.
Yes, and 3v3 is coming.
Right, that I was going to say, and I believe 3v3 is coming, and I was going to ask you to confirm that, so thank you.
Yeah.
That is a thing, is right now, 5v5 maps can be built by us, the guys who are playing it, right? And if you have a cool idea, you should go into the Vassal module and definitely mess with it and throw it down, see what you get. And then there is a maps channel in the Discord to be able to submit that and have people be able to download it, play on it, and be able to provide feedback. Now, this is the big part, and I'm going to turn it over to Wonky on this one, because Wonky, you've had a little bit more experience with this lately than I have.
Yeah, so the big thing that I want to call out with the map submission and community maps is, you know, we've been doing leagues. I think there's been at least two leagues that have been playing with the user maps. And I've got a little bit of a, maybe a pet peeve, we'll put it that, is that we're getting not as much feedback as I would like. Right, so part of the plan with the idea of community maps, and this has been stated ages ago, is that these community maps can be a funnel to create tournament maps, you know, maps that we will play on for the tournament season, to be able to, you know, kind of keep the map pool fresh, right? If we had the same, was it 5 or 6 maps, I think, were in the current tournament pool, mm-hmm. right? If we had those same 6 maps year in, year out, the game would be stale. And one of the things that I think is kind of cool is that they have opened up to the community to be able to create and submit maps that we can use for building out that tournament map rotation. I know we've seen quite a few get posted to the Discord. We've played games on a handful of them now. I think the Fantasy League tested 4 or 5 maps, I think.
Yeah.
And then the last Vassal League, I think, tested another 4. I know there was some overlap between the two leagues on the maps. However, you know, we're using this testing to try and, you know, build out that tournament rotation. So I know there's been, you know, in the last couple of days, there's been a bunch of feedback on my map from 2 people from one game that they played. And we took it and we made tweaks to the map based on that. So. And then I tested it with the tweaks, and I actually quite like it a lot more than it was before. I had a really good game on it. Was that last night or 2 nights ago now? Might have been last night. But the changes were really good. So especially when it comes to maps, the more ways people play on it, the more different perspectives on the map we get, the better. Because the way that game went for those 2 players was definitely very different than the first game I had on that map when I played. And it could be, you know, from war bans to board stain, multiple different reasons. But we made some very positive changes to the map to provide that. Now, like I said, it's a little bit of pet peeve of mine. Is, you know, we've had, what was it, 10 or 12 people in the last league over 4 rounds. You know, that's 40-some games. And then however many, was it 8 in the Fantasy League?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eight players, and it was like 8 or 9 rounds. And again, I don't know how many community maps you use, but probably a couple of them. So we had like a good, all even like 30-ish games from that on community maps. So like 70-ish, roughly. Again, really spitballing numbers here. We had like 80-some games on those maps, and I think we've gotten like only a handful of feedback on the maps. And that to me was a little discouraging, I guess. Because part of the reason we wanted people to play on them in the league was to foster feedback. Now, it could have been positive feedback as well. Like, hey, I really like this map because XYZ reason.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had a lot of radio silence. And that, I think, has been bugging me a little bit. Because I think this is a cool opportunity for the community to come together and kind of crowdsource fun and interesting maps to play in events. Because I've definitely heard some complaints about the I forget who it was. Someone railed on the map one from this current tournament season about how boring the map was.
Because
they played on that map instead of playing on what I think they were supposed to play on my map. I don't remember. But they played the wrong map. And the map,
I think they were
like,
supposed to play on Gamer Dad's map.
Or Gamer Dad's map. And it's like, man, this map is really boring. And like, here's your opportunity to help like guide some of that, I guess.
Sure. I will tell you, I know from a standpoint of playing I know I didn't give a lot of feedback when we did the, when they were thrown into the fantasy league.
Yeah.
And the other league. And part of that was because I'll be honest with like the fantasy league, because it was already a fantasy style, like football draft league. I didn't have a team really that it was like, this is my tournament team. It was, what did I get stuck with? You know, and so that throws things off to begin with. And then you start throwing in custom maps can really just throw to where it's like, okay, am I giving like, and I really had to sit down and look at it whenever I played on one of them going, do I have actual constructive feedback that I can give? Or is my feedback based on because my team traded out these few models this week and didn't perform the way that I wanted it to?
Yeah, and that's definitely hard when giving feedback on maps. Because first off, okay, if you only play one game, the one game you play can be very...
It can slanted, go one way or impacted. Another, right?
Yeah. Like say your dice are really bad.
Yep.
Or it's you have a negative play experience or just a bad game. We'll just say that.
Yep.
Like it can be hard to separate. Okay. How was the map versus how was the game?
Right.
If the game didn't go well, right? Like your dice are bad and
yeah.
You know, things that you probably could have done, you don't end up doing because of dice and and monster spawns can be weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be hard to separate that, but I think, it's just more of a like,
right. And
hey, the idea with the community maps was to kind of crowdsource testing a bit to get more opinions, to get more games, right? Our playtest group is not massive. And to really try and, stress test the maps a little bit, because again, for something like a map, there is going to be a million different ways you can tackle it with a million different warbands and strategies and things you prioritize and all sorts of things. So that, I guess this is like my little mini rant that
it's not a mini rant. It's a call to action. Seriously guys, if you're out there and you're playing games on these community maps, if there's something you like about it, speak up about that. If there's something you don't like about it, speak up about it. Because if you do nothing and say nothing, you're literally through omission of your statements saying these things are fine the way they are. We don't need to change them.
Yeah.
Or, hey, this thing, even though maybe I had a bad experience on it and I don't like it, I'm just not going to say anything because I don't feel like I'm heard, means you're okay with it. And that's not what this is about. This is about literally getting your opinions out there to help these guys.
Yeah, and it's something that, like I said, I want to be like, oh man, you played a game on the map. You must provide feedback. But I guess it's more the amount of games we've played versus the amount of feedback just has not felt the greatest. But again, people are playing this to enjoy the game. It's not like they have to do it. But if you are playing in Vassal on some of these maps, we would appreciate if you could give us some feedback on maps.
Yeah.
Especially. And the thing to call it here too is, Fabius was saying, like, create maps and put them up on the Discord. We're always looking at maps to do stuff with, to play games on, to have fun on. And there's been some interesting ones. we'll say that. There's been some gimmicky ones. I mean, I've even created the swamp map horrendousness that didn't quite work when I put I built it. I looked at it, yeah, that one's probably not good.
Well, but, and even if you want to come at it from a different angle, right? Like you and I just did one this last week.
Yeah.
That was we literally built it as hey, let's do this together.
Yeah. And let's try something, right? So like we went with some kind of interesting ideas with the tier 4 monsters instead of, lower tier monsters for like the friendly soul pits to see how it works. because we got to test it and see how it is. Maybe tier 4 monsters are kind of more interesting because you got to put more resources into them. They get interesting when they respawn.
Yep.
You know, in more dangerous places. But we got to see, right? Because if we don't play it and test it and see, you know, the possibilities of the maps are pretty wide open.
Yep.
We've got a lot of different terrain. There's a lot of different ways you can put stuff on the map. And until we know how it plays, you know, nothing's off limits when it comes to a map.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's the important thing to note. So it's one of those things, again, guys, like Wonky said, nobody can require you to do it. You're playing the game to have fun. But if you have a couple of thoughts on a map and you play on it, you know, jot them down, throw them in the channel. And as he said, they don't all have to be negative. They can be positive of,
yeah,
hey, this was a really good experience having this tier 1 through 3, you know, monster pit here, or mm-hmm. having this soul pit here made the game more interesting. We had to move around for it. So that's the thing to think about, you know, is feedback doesn't always have to be negative. It can always be positive or negative. Yeah. And
knowing
it's just needing that information.
Yeah, knowing what design patterns in a map are successful will help us build better maps over time, right? If we know doing XYZ thing has been good, we can kind of, okay, we'll do that thing plus something else to kind of test, you know, try something else out. So,
yep.
I personally would appreciate a bit more feedback on maps, not just my map. I'm saying any of the maps that are submitted that are playing, because you should think about any map that's submitted has the possibility of becoming a tournament map. Now, you can state that that's not the intent when you post it, right? If you're like, hey, this is just kind of a more fun, like, didn't you do like a Gladiator Arena one or something where it was like,
yeah, I do have, like, one
treacherous
that's,
I still or something.
Yeah, I'm still working on it, but it legitimately has walls on it to where it creates a Colosseum in the middle of the board.
Yeah, which, like, a fun map to maybe even do like some weird King of the Hill style gameplay, you know, not something I think we would want for like a more competitive event, but like those maps are fun too, right? To have those out there and play around. So, I guess that's, we'll leave it there for the map stuff, but yeah, would definitely appreciate more feedback as people are playing on the maps and, you know, as people are submitting them. Like I know we haven't had a chance to play in our map yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And there's still a couple of the community maps I haven't had a chance to play on yet, which I've been trying to remedy that over the next like week or so. I'll be trying to get games on some more of them.
There's quite a few of them that, because of real life, I haven't had a chance to play on them right now, and it frustrates me because I really would like to play on them, but
yeah,
it's one of those things which, like you said, real life has to take precedence, as we've always talked about, and games will come later.
yeah definitely. So
all right,
so I think we kind of talked that to death a bit.
Yep definitely talked that to death a bit. So as we said earlier, remember guys, LVO is coming up, Adepticon's coming up, big events, so definitely go check them out. But with that, let's get to the you know, meat and potatoes of tonight's episode that we like to talk about.
Enter the dojo.
All right, Wonky, I know when we did the map last week and we put that out, we had talked about dojoing up some warbands for that. And so that's what we're going to do tonight, I think, right?
Yeah, I think we'll look at kind of doing some dojo here. And then obviously, yeah, maybe kind of take our map into perspective a bit of, hey, what kind of things would we want when we play on our map?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I suppose I should actually load that up then, huh?
That might not be the worst idea.
I'm sitting here and I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever, it's a thing. And, oh, I really probably need to load that up.
Yeah, so I'll do a quick overview of our map. Just kind of, it's hard to kind of go through on the podcast, but really the kind of the big thing about the map is it's single soul pit dead center, and then two hexes towards each player's deployment is a tier 4 monster, and then there's a random tier 3 only out to the left, and there's two shrines at the midline, and then there's triple teleporters. So Single soul pit does kind of tend to center the action around the soul pit, but you do have those two random tier 4 monsters that will be respawning near that soul pit with some central shrines to kind of fight about. So the big things is, you know, single soul pit can kind of skew things a little bit.
Just a wee bit.
And then obviously having tier 4 monsters to start does also mean you got to put a bit more effort into those, essentially, right? So, yeah, that is kind of, and there's some different some terrain, but it, again, it's hard to kind of describe that. So you'll have to either go watch the VOD.
I mean, there is a post of it in the actual maps channel too, so you could
Take a look at that. Yeah, and it has been posted to the maps channel. So, again, we haven't played any games on it, so we haven't tweaked it at all yet, but that's kind of the rough idea. Really, the big things for me was testing out tier 4 monsters instead of 1 through 3s for like your friendly side first turn monster kill.
So, which I think we both agreed that we wanted to try and test that out.
Yeah, I don't. We have not seen that on any map yet. Usually the easy, quote unquote, easy monster kills a 1 through 3, which does vary in degrees of difficulty, right? Inferno is a bit more difficult to kill than a Gloom.
Yes.
And yeah, the other thing I want to try is more midline monsters, which was more of a V1 thing where you couldn't just straight charge monsters. A lot of monsters were just spawning on the midline. So you had to kind of walk charge or use some pushes or, because it kind of opened up some interesting stuff where you could steal monsters easier. So that might be something I want to test in the next map that I make. Might be more of that kind of a setup. So
that makes sense.
Quick thing on the map. So yeah, the big thing is 3 monster pits, 2 shrines, single soul pit, and it's 2 random tier 4s, and then the other pit is always an inferno. Well, it's only tier 3, which right now is only an inferno. So that's kind of the base of it. So yeah, Fabius, I think we thought you were going to start.
Yeah.
And you had an Ista kind of warband you wanted to dojo.
So, I mean, Ista's one of them that I struggled to find a home with for a long time. And I think a while back, I found one by working about at it with you, talking a little bit. But I also think
me with one at Adepticon last year.
Yeah. I brought a very interesting one that did some work last year at Adepticon. Yeah. And I still kind of like that idea, and I think I'm going to play around with that some more. But I also wanted to do an Ista one, I think, specifically for this, because Ista's one that we have right in the box, right? It's it's not one that we have to go outside of the core box to really have a good core to it. And I think that's an important thing. So, with that, I mean, the piece that I'm going to immediately throw into that list is the Don. You know, I love my Don Ragar. He's actually had a very special place in my heart for, the last 6 months. Because he saved so many of my models multiple times with his redirection.
Yeah, he's, still one of my favorites. So, yep. Yeah, no, I don't, I always find Don Ragar an interesting one in Ista, because Ista has 3 fantastic tanks that are champions. And I feel like a lot of times I play Ista, I like to be very, very tanky because I want to make the healing have more value. So you have Thrommel, Marcus, and Don Ragar as your true tanks that are in Ista. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Don's the more tankier option, where if you bring the Marcus in, it's more of that setup. Because I almost always like to include Thrommel when I play Ista, because I just like Thrommel a lot.
Makes sense.
So I usually look at Thrommel, Don Ragar, or Thrommel, Marcus.
And that makes sense, especially, with the idea of the effigy power being called and everybody getting to fly, and there's nothing scarier than that big-ass dwarf just flying at you with his hammer.
Yeah, he is a bit weaker on the defensive side, but he just disrupts so much that I really, really like the Thrommel. And then I kind of pair him with Marcus if I want, you know, another source of knockdown and more setup. And then there's also a fair chunk of Res 1 Ista models, so the protective stance provides value. And then Don's more than just like, all right, I'm going to be really annoying. I'm never going to die. You know, stone, you know, all the normal Don things. But he does tend to have a bit less, you know, setup potential, right? He doesn't bring a knockdown. He doesn't bring a condition. He just brings a whole lot of not dying.
Yeah.
Or if you can get him to crit with the club, he does still crit for 5, which is kind of nice.
Yes, it is. It is so, very, very nice.
But I will never disagree with the Donregar on a Ista Warband.
Yeah. So obviously bringing Donnie, and then my first immediate thought beyond Donnie is looking at bringing Istariel.
Okay.
Because A, with the new, you know, with what happened for the changes to the effigy power, plus with her having Fly and Nimble as a permanent thing then.
You mean Isabel, not Istariel, then?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Isabel is who
you
I was meaning.
Did you confuse
them?
Okay.
I did confuse them. I'm sorry.
You talked to Istariel. Yep. Okay. So, yeah. Isabel.
Yeah, Isabel. With her changes and stuff, I think she's just kind of a... she's a good solid piece to have around because she can charge in someplace, hit people, and then still throw out her lay on hands. You know, she's just a good all-around support model.
Yeah, I mean, she just feels like she does a bit of everything now. And I think that's having a model or two like that in your warband's good because it kind of gives you like options. Like, hey, she just kind of needs to be a soul gazer this game. Or, hey, she just has to go heal stuff this game. Or, hey, she just got to go blow up that demon.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the other thing that I love about her is she is a fantastic answer at this point if you go and get her an early level against somebody who's playing... you know, Tomas with a Masuzi, and they go, cool, I've got diamond armor. She looks at him and goes, cool, I'm going to be right back. Level 2, holy blast.
Yeah, I mean, she's really to the point with, if you're playing Tomas, like, you got to, depending on your Tomas build, but, I mean, with Retribution Path being so strong into, you know, demons and undead, like, you really got to look at banning an Isabel, which is a thing that was not a thing for a long time.
That's not like, something you really want to do.
No, not typically, because it's kind of interesting because you can play a little bit of chicken with that too, with other parts of your warband. Like,
yep.
Like knowing, like, hey, they might have to ban that Isabel, so I don't need redundancy somewhere else.
Yep.
So, I like the Isabel pick.
Yeah, so I think she's my next pick for that. She also, like we've talked about in the past, she can make a decent monster hunter in the absence of a monster hunter getting banned. But obviously
with this map with tier fours, terrible to have.
Yep. And my immediate pick for, hey, I need a monster hunter. It's going to be my lo and behold, my boy Chopathon Brock.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to bring him. He's within God. He's good at taking out monsters. And, you know, not just because we're looking at a tier four here, but it's just one of those, he's a good aggressor, he takes out monsters well, and he just brings a lot to the table where he can even savagery, right? So he can, once again, give himself even that plus one res to make him even tankier. So I know I'm following along like a normal footpath for you, and you're like, okay, what'd you do? Did you kind of copy my warbands? But Brock's my main pick for that, like, that monster hunter role.
Yeah, so Donregar, Isabel, and Brock are three models that I would be... like, when I build an Ista list, it would not surprise me to find those three models in the list quite frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're just good in Ista.
Yeah. And so, like, that was my thought, is go back to your core, right? And if you want to talk about a core three, Donnie, Isabel, Brock,
kind of fit that. I mean, that's a pretty solid start to an Ista list.
From there, I started kind of figuring out what else I want in the list. And this is where things get a little varied for me. Because I start looking at who else is in God, what else can I take, what's going to do work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my first thoughts that always comes to mind, especially with her coming out in January, is somebody that's near and dear to your heart. And that's Lori.
Yeah, I love her to death. With the Brock Dawnregar part of the core too, you get extra value out of her level 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Elixir at level 1. The only thing with Lori is, at least how I tend to play her, which may or may not be the optimum way, is I tend to funnel a lot of fate through her.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tend to include Lori Bella, I definitely want to make sure that I'm not going real, real heavy on like the fate requirements in my warband.
Right.
So that's something to kind of keep in mind is like, now you don't have to play her that way. You can play her a bit more. Like, she's got a useful gun.
Yep.
She's Soul Harvest 4. You can do some nice stuff with Elixir. She has value outside of that, but I feel like if you're not kind of looking at weird ways to use a grenade most turns, you're probably better off putting something else in her slot.
No, and that's totally fair. And you know my mind works very similar in the aspect of, mm-hmm, I look for that grenade opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a game that I know Coonerbus and I were playing a while back where I ended up walking up off of my shrine, used my grenade, blew him off of his shrine, right?
Yeah. So
neither of us got fate for the turn.
Okay.
And then it ended up resulting in, like, a Canuck Amara showing up and basically putting his cane to, like, 3 health.
Yeah.
And so, like, I always am trying to look for those opportunities and stuff, so that's, mm-hmm, where I was like, well, I think Lori's a good fit for me.
Yeah.
My next play off of that was still looking at the theme of what I've kind of been doing, and it's, realistically, I started thinking about it, and I was like, I like Barnaskis.
Yeah, he fits a couple of good roles here. He brings some good knockdown.
Yep.
Which is fantastic. He brings another, like, backup Soul Gazer at Soul Harvest 4. Yeah, I like Barney a lot. He's another model very commonly when I play Istus. So a lot of what you have, like, the 5 you have here are pretty common things for you. When I look at building an Istus list, I like to play. So, yeah. I'm digging it.
Yeah, so, you know, then at that point, I started looking at it going, what am I light on, right? And realistically, the one thing I keep looking at and seeing that I'm light on at this point would be an actual another aggressor,
mm-hmm,
or, yeah, damage dealer.
If your Brock gets banned, your damage output is a bit light. Like, Barney with some, like, knockdown can set up some really ridiculous Lori Bella shooting.
Because,
mm-hmm, Lori Bella's gun is ridiculous.
Yes.
If you can generate some dice for it.
Yep.
I agree with you. I think if I'm looking at what you have right there, unless I really don't like the Lori Bella for some reason, right, depending on if I want to be clustered or not or whatever. Mm-hmm. Brock's kind of the one I'm looking at right now and be like, yeah, that guy can just get out.
Yep. And so, I mean, my next immediate thought was to grab Istariel at this point.
And, okay.
Which, like I mentioned her earlier, when I was meeting Isabel, but she was on my list of somebody to grab as well, because A, she's hard to nail down.
Mm-hmm.
B, she brings good damage to the table, and then she combos well with Barney.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Barney gives you a second source of fire for Istariel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they don't trample on each other for the magic items they want either, which is always a bit of a consideration.
Yep.
So that's kind of nice. Yeah, I think Astariel's good. She fits in a lot of Ista lists.
And this is where I run into the problem at this point, is working on my 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously I have Donnie in the list, but the one thing I technically am missing is a Soul Gazer. But at the same time, I have Isabel, who's Soul Harvest 5.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Lori, who's Soul Harvest 4. I've got Barney, who's Soul Harvest 4.
Well, and then near Istariel, Brock, and Dawnregar are all 3s.
Right, and then Istariel, Brock, and Dawnregar are all 3s. So
yeah,
it's not like I'm entirely hurting either.
Correct.
The one thing I'm missing, like I said, though, is the fact that I don't have them, the ability to take them from, like, an extra hex away, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I think your seventh, this is pretty wide open.
It is.
You could do, there's some, like, you could definitely go a Soul Gazer.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, a Saiyan would be kind of fun. It's a lot more healing, some more condition. Denial, it's not bad. Svetlana's pretty good.
See, and Svetlana's one I had thought about playing with.
Yeah, so Svetlana's pretty good. She's pretty durable, too. So if, like, the Dawn gets banned, you know, she still has some, like, inherent tankiness on her own. She's not bad. If we're tailoring it a bit towards this map in specific, the getting her to level 2, which, depending on if you can get that first Soul Gaze, could be difficult to do.
Yeah.
The thing with Svet is, they did make her gun a lot better in the last patch, where it's a lot more relevant. It actually kind of helps you with the Astarial, right? You can remove stealth from stuff, so that's good. She can feel kind of bad when you're not soul gazing with her, because her gun got better, but it's still not, like, the world's greatest gun.
Yeah.
But, you know, the monster command where she can push monsters is pretty strong, especially here where you know that there's tier 4 monsters that would be very relevant on this map.
Yeah.
On other maps, she might lose some value. So I do like this Svetlana.
And I haven't actually taken her and played with her yet since her change, so that might be a good opportunity option.
Yeah, I think she's a pretty good seventh. I played with her in the one game on my map that I kind of alluded to before. And she was okay. I think she ended up putting some damage on someone. She kill something with her gun. I don't know. I had like a Brock, really. Lanala's Piper I killed.
Okay.
Anyways. My Svet was banned. And he killed... He used his to just, I think, Soul Harvest. Now I'm misremembering some of my games. It was my Svet. My Svet game was the game against guns on a different map. But, I think Svet can fit really well. The one that might be kind of intriguing might be a Haxa.
Okay.
And my thought is that if you put Svet in, you're still kind of a bit damage light, right? Because if you ban out the Brock,
right,
you really mostly have the Astarial as your main damage dealer.
Yep.
So if you're not going to want to bring more damage in, Haxa's kind of interesting because he, like Lorybella, is kind of, you know, like one of those kind of big utility pieces.
Right.
And he might have maybe the best fate ability in the game.
I think
it's up there.
Equilibrium's up there,
pretty but... Equilibrium's pretty crazy to me, I think. Now with the range is only 2 hexes, maybe it's not as wild. It used to feel very, very wild in V1 because I feel like the range was pretty substantial. He also was 3-inch melee too, which when there was a lot of 3-inch melee, so that was also part of him.
Yeah.
But what's interesting? So the interesting thing about Haxa to me in this warband is, first off, I love Equilibrium. Really love Equilibrium. It's just such a big, like, just number swing. So Equilibrium, for those that aren't familiar, it's Haxa. It's a 1-action, 1 fate. You target an enemy model within 2 hexes, takes D3+2 true damage. Target friendly model within 2 hexes heals for the same amount. Equilibrium can't do more damage or heal more than the life. So you can kill a model with it, but say they've got 4 hit points, but you rolled 5. It doesn't actually do 5 and heal for 5, essentially. It's really strong ability, especially when you have other healing as well. I've always liked Haxa. He's another Soul Harvest 4.
Yep.
Which is pretty good too. So you don't have a Soul Gazer, but what's kind of interesting is, like, any of your models with a friend can Soul Harvest relatively well. And he does have the 2 hex on the staff. And he's got a 1S curse magic shot, which ain't bad. The idols aren't terrible. I don't know. He just seems like, depending on what you're trying to do in that, because admittedly, You could also go a tank. That last slot feels pretty good.
Yeah.
Another damage. Like, you, I feel like the core six you have is very, very good. That you could kind of play around with your seventh quite a bit.
And I don't think you're wrong. And I think that's what makes that such a hard choice. But I almost also feel like, in a way, that if I decide I want to bring Hoxha in, because I've noticed a lot of the times with Hoxha, I feel like I really want to use Equilibrium.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's another one of those that maybe I have to look at replacing, like, Lori with Hoxha.
Yeah, they feel kind of that same Swiss Army knife role.
Right, which I think if I do that, you know, then I look at something like either drop in Marcus, right? And because then I've got Isabel, Hoxha, and Barnaskis, naturally, who
are all resin one. Yeah.
Looking to get that res too, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I could drop in some other bruiser / aggressor.
Yep.
Who could put in some work for me. The biggest problem I run into a lot of the time is, like, who that's going to be.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if I'm bringing Hoxha in anyway, I actually have the honest thought of maybe grab Nephany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do then have a little bit of a curse combo going.
Yep.
Yeah, you could definitely go that way too. If you bring Hoxha, and I think bringing Nephany as your seventh isn't bad. So swapping Lori for Hoxha, and then your seventh is Nephany. I mean, you could get Dawnregar banned, but you could still have, you know, Isabel, Lori, Bella, Barney. That's all res one. All, or you'd have Hoxha. Sorry, Hoxha res one. Sorry, I was misreading. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so good. You have Isabel, Hoxha, Barney that are all res one. Edgy four res one's not bad. You have a lot of healing too, where, like, you just kind of make up the, like, the, okay, they're not res two, but, like, hey, I've got lay on hands, I've got was it healing idol, I've got self repair,
right?
That where you can kind of make up some of that. Yeah, and you have Equilibrium, right, with Hoxha. So I don't, and I've tried it, I actually played a couple of games with Gruul where I went solo Dawnregar and I played with, like, a Lori Gendrys frontline.
Right.
And it didn't work the worst because of regen, elixir, you know, the res one.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, Ista has restoration potion and there's a lot of healing there where I think you could definitely pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the ban becomes kind of interesting because you might see some Dawnregar bans, but I don't think you actually super hate that with what you have left to pick from.
Yeah, actually, I don't think I mind that as much.
And I think, you know, it's one thing that a lot of people like to play with a tank or a defender, but I don't know, I've played a couple of games without it, and it doesn't feel like a necessity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be a little bit smarter, I think, about how you play, or you have to have some good healing or something to kind of, you know, let that chip damage res 1 versus res 2 can take, to you kind of get around it. But you have that in Ista. Like, Isabel, Hoxha, Lori Bella, you know, Barney all have good healing mechanics, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really don't hate it.
So, yeah, I think I kind of actually am digging the idea of, you know, dropping in, like, a Nephany in that slot with, and switching out Lori to Hoxha. It also increases the agility because Lori's Agi 3 versus Hoxha's Agi 4.
Yep.
So that automatically is going to, I'm not going to say it's going to protect him a ton more, right? But it'll protect him a little bit more.
No, sometimes that one less dies, it can be helpful.
It can be. So, you know, it's one of those things that it makes me think that then if I wanted to make a change from there, and, like, this is just theoretics, right? But maybe if I feel like I need another defender, that's where I can drop Barney and bring in,
like, Marcus, probably. Like Marcus,
right?
Yeah, I think Marcus would be the...
Yeah.
Because I think you'd want the no fate knockdown
for what
the rest of the warband is.
100%. But I still think that's, like, that still feels good to me at that point. So, yeah. So yeah, I like this. I think I'm actually gonna try that and go with the Hoxha over Lori Bella, because Lori's a comfort place for me. I know that. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll try that. And so the list ends up being Dhonragar, Isabel, Brock, Hoxha, Barney, Istariel, Nefany.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot, actually. So
I think it's a pretty solid list.
Nice. No, I like it quite a bit.
So, all right. Well, we've done a quick dojo on what I'm thinking about running for when we play.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking about? Let's talk
about it. All right. So I'm looking at Tomas. So Tomas is probably, I mean, Ista. Yeah. Well, I mean, I do more currently like Ista for, I think power level wise, I think Ista is very, very strong right now, and I can play a lot of my Minotaurs and Dwarves in Ista, you know, when I'm not playing Gruul. But I've always liked Tomas. I've always been a big fan of Zeal. I had the debuff warband I really enjoyed for a while. But I haven't played a lot of Tomas lately. I don't know why.
Probably because you've been focusing on Gruul.
Because I just, you know, play all the Gruul.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Tomas. And I don't think most of what I have here is going to be earth-shattering. I've got some ideas for kind of like 1 to 2 slots. But it's Tomas, so first off,
I mean,
you start with Fazeal.
Yeah, right. If you don't, in Tomas, start with Fazeal, I kind of have to look at you and go, what's wrong?
Yeah, he's definitely one that probably on par with like Zonya and Bruellen. Like, if you're not bringing him in the warband, like, why are you playing? Like, I don't know why you'd ever play Tomas without Fazeal. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
foresee why you would.
I like, legitimately, the only thing I can think of is if you're trying to force an extra challenge on yourself, right? Because like you said, and like we've talked about in multiple podcast episodes before, when you see somebody sit down across the table from you and they are playing Tomas, they are playing Bruellen, and you see them drop the Fazeal or the Zonya, you immediately start taking into consideration what your warband can do against that to have to deal with it, or do you have to ban it?
Yeah, and I think the big thing with Fazeal, so obviously the decap's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So the on effigy power turn, decap. You know, with his avatar bonus, he gets to charge a mile, so it's very hard to get away from him. I mean, he has some downsides because he's undead. He also theoretically has some benefits, I guess you can think of it too. Sometimes the soul going somewhere else is actually good.
Yes.
Right? If your Fazeal's going to die. You can also make him very, very tanky. You can actually, Fazeal's interesting because, you know, you read the decap and you're like, okay, that's insane. Like, decap's massive. But he actually has a lot of control elements to him, which we're going to kind of
bomb.
which we're going to kind of get into as we get going on the rest of the warband. But it's actually a way I've played Fazeal in the past is running more towards Pestilence necessarily than decap.
Yep.
And there's going to be a couple of things that I kind of go for with that in this warband. So as we keep going, but yeah, I think Fazeal, he works so well with the other champions of Tomas that it's like, it's kind of hard to not want to put him in. And I love the V1 model. It looks like Arthas from Warcraft.
Yes.
I'm a big Death Knight player in World of Warcraft. So Fazeal is right up my alley, with the old human head version, at least.
Well, and you saw what I did to my V2 one, right?
I have not.
Oh.
Oh, you did the Skyhead to him.
Yeah,
right?
I did the Skyhead to him, so.
Yeah. Yep, so.
I like that same aesthetic you said.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, not that I don't dislike the current, like, the new one, but I've always been a big, like, World of Warcraft fan, so the Arthas Death Knight kind of thing. Yep. But anyways, really like him, and I like the control you can do with him, too. The tankiness, if you let him, now in fives it doesn't quite happen as much. In threes you definitely can get him rolling where he is just a bear to do anything to. Getting him like agi boots or diamond armor, stacking him with Marcus. You can, you know, with the leech and the overleech, and I've always liked him quite a bit. So yeah, Fazeal. Next up actually is Marcus.
Yeah.
Marcus is just all around good defender. with diamond armor item that you put on someone, he can stack some up to res 2, and it ignores one armor shred. So, you know, you can have an Agi 4 res 2 Fazeel running around, which is pretty fun. Also, knockdown, the wall can be really strong depending on the matchups. You can do really goofy stuff with walls and shrines. Particularly, what's really hilarious on our map specifically, because we have the two impassable on the one shrine, you can actually wall off every hex but one on the one shrine.
Yep.
Which is kind of funky, a weird play. Might be worth it. I don't know. But yeah. Anyways, Marcus, I mean, Marcus kind of can go in any warband, to be honest. He just does a bit of everything. He's really good at engaging, really good at setup the knockdown.
I love the Marcus pick strictly because Marcus is, as you said, he's the best all-arounder, in my opinion. He's got everything that you could possibly want to throw into a warband, because he's got a good damage grid on his sword. He's got knockdown for a 1S, right? He's got a fate ability that proves to be handy in different scenarios and cases. He's still a Soul Harvest 4 model. So he's just that great all-arounder that you can literally slip into a list and go, yep, there he is.
All right. And in my next step to not reinvent the wheel... is Mazuzi. So, there's some, so there's some interesting stuff with Mazuzi that, I mean, obviously Mazuzi with diamond armor has been a bit of a thing, lately. Now granted, against your warband, like pretty sure the Isabelle is probably gonna have to get banned. But Mazuzi with diamond armor has been thing talked about a lot, gets really hard to kill. But one of the things I'm kind of looking at with him, too, and this might be a bit underrated part of his kit, is first off, decay, right? So, like, kind of in your warband, right, there, you had this big deal of these, you know, Agi 5 models, like a Nephanine or an Astariel. Well, if I decay their Agi down to Agi 3, that's kind of sad for them.
We bet.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think gets overlooked a lot in his card is the fact that he can apply curse or poison.
Yes.
So he is one of several models that can kind of activate pestilence from Fazeel. He's also immune to poison, which is kind of good into those Krognar matchups. He leeches too. He does true damage on the poison, so... You know, he can kind of go to town on some of those frontline tanks. Mazuzi's just good.
Well, don't forget, he's a Soul Gazer.
He is also a Soul Gazer.
And he has access to Pain Reflector upon leveling.
Correct. Yeah, so he's very, very strong. I think especially with the diamond armor, he's a very easy target to, like, all right, turn one, he buys diamond armor and walks twice to get near a soul pit.
Yep.
Like, that feels like a pretty good activation for him. I think he's good. You can, I've been debating some thought process of actually like upping his melee with like the level up. It's probably not as good, but, the Rod of Ruin's kind of an interesting,
I think it's situational combat maneuver, right?
Yeah.
Because the way you really make Rod of Ruin effective is you've got to get your opponent to have souls.
Correct, which will happen on occasion.
But
because the big thing too with Mazuzi is like if you put diamond armor on him, like he can get stuck in and feel pretty good. Like res 2 ignores armor shred with leech. Like he's a very tanky boy.
Yep.
So yeah, Mazuzi. I think he's good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up.
Who's number 4?
Who's number 4?
Yeah.
So next up is a model I personally hate to play against, and that's Nephanine. So, you're kind of seeing a bit of what I'm building up here, but
you're a bastard.
but yeah, Nephanine. So Nephanine applies curse. She does AOE damage based on models that have curse.
Yep.
It does have to be adjacent now. So it used to be a way bigger. It used to be like a dumb amount of hexes, and then it was very problematic. But still, if you laser storm like two models, you know, that are a curse and getting a whole bunch of true damage.
As long as you don't roll double ones.
Correct. I mean, that's pretty sad. But, but yeah, so she's just strong. She brings a lot of mobility to the list.
Yep.
So Fazeel has a lot of mobility in how far he can go. Nefni can also go pretty far. She also gets pretty good with her level 2 with Afterburners. What is slightly interesting is it's a little bit funky if you ever get both Fazeel and Nefni, because both of them kind of want level 2, yep. Right? Because Fazeel wants level 2 so he can leech over. Nefni definitely wants level 2 for the Afterburners. Yep. And then Void Dome is incredibly strong with her at level 3.
Yep.
But, yeah, so Nefni's in here. So, again, now I've got 3 models that can curse. And then I've got 2 models that can work off of the curse of the other 2 models.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, Fazeel can AoE Pestilence people. Nefni can, you know, Laser Storm adjacent. All right. So next up is, and this is a bit of a pick, just because a lot of maps we've seen submitted lately, and then our map as a tier 4 is Kane. So Kane is just probably the best monster hunter in the game. I'm trying to think if there's someone that's better.
I think Brock technically is better still.
I think Brock might be better. Yeah.
I think Brock is technically better if you go by just straight card numbers and all that.
Yeah.
Right? Because Brock has... Yeah. He's
the +1 damage with the backswing.
Yeah, he's got +1 damage with the backswing. Brock's going to be overall better at killing them, I guess, more consistently, probably. But as we've talked about multiple times, we've seen it talked about on the Discord, you take Kane, you throw a damn hunter's knife on him,
mm-hmm.
and that, I goodbye monsters. He's literally just going to run around the map going, I'm going to murder him.
Yeah, you do, and then the big part that makes Kane strong in this scenario is that the warband bonus from Tomas.
Yep.
So when he kills that monster after he cut, so Kane's a really strong monster hunter, real quick, is that when he does an attack, he can cut for up to the damage he dealt to do that amount of true damage to his target. So for instance, without a hunter's knife, we'll just say he charges, we'll say a gloom.
Yep.
If he crits the gloom for 4, he can cut himself or another friendly is one of the 2 hexes, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So you can cut a friendly model within 2 hexes for that's up to that same amount to do that same amount to his target. So you charge a gloom, you crit for 4, cut Kane for 4, you do 4 to the gloom, and that is a dead gloom with only 2 actions.
Yep.
Which is very strong. Now, give the man a hunter's knife, now he can crit for up to 6. And again, you can cut for up to 6.
Yep.
So, he can do a lot of damage to monsters very quickly. He's got some pretty strong level ups. He's got some anti-healing. You know, Soul Harvest 4, but purely from just a, I need to remove monsters from the table.
Yep.
Kane's pretty up there. Like, you give him a hunter's knife and he'll probably end up netting you more fate than that by the monster kills he gets throughout the game. Because he'll probably get at least, you know, depending on the monster pits, like 2 to 3 monster kills probably. Yep. And he can do it with not spending a lot of actions. Well, and that's kind of the big thing too.
And the other thing I like about Kane is we've been talking about his sword and charging in and doing all that. I actually like that him with a hunter's knife also lets him do that to monsters that are not adjacent.
Correct. You can shoot him with magic.
Yeah, you can shoot him with his magic, right? Now, I know there's a lot of times people hear me say that and then the first immediate spot is, well, but I don't get the fate off it. Right, but what if you're A, stealing your opponent's monster? Mm-hmm. Or B, you just need to kill that monster in your backfield, right? You don't need the extra fate. Kane's got the ability to just go, cool, bang, crit for 6.
Yep. Yeah, and then, again, he heals when he gets that kill. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, Kane's good. I wasn't the biggest fan of him in Tomas for a while, but when the warband bonus changed, it upped him a lot in my book.
Yeah, it made him find a good home there.
Yep. All right. So the next one.
Yep. So we've done five of them. So who's number six? Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So the next one in my book, I think, with the current build I'm going, is Abathos. So partly I haven't played them much. And partly because the applesauce bomb.
Yeah.
I think there's a few important things with Abathos here. I think he gives me a bit of a good magic ranged presence, which I don't currently have. I mean, Mizuzi's got a little bit of shooting, but it's only reach 4. Abathos is reach 5. So it gives me a similar shooting, you know, kind of to an Astariel. So I think there's some value there. Contagion is situationally a pretty good combat maneuver. I'm not the highest agi in the world, but most things are 4s.
Yep.
So knocking something down essentially makes it to a 5, again, outside Mizuzi, depending on your levels. Technically, Mizuzi can also get up to a 4 with a level to kind of make stuff higher up there. So I kind of like it. But the big part is, you know, as we've mentioned before, is the applesauce bomb. So Abathos can AoE curse models based on coalesce tokens. And he makes people generate coalesce tokens when they die, even if they're not demons. So yeah, the thought process mostly here is I've got, you know, curse and poison that I'm triggering off of. So he is a good source of curse in kind of an AoE situation. And I just haven't really played with him, so I thought he'd be fun to play.
I like it. I mean, it definitely makes me look at Hoxha going, well, Hoxha's going to be useful to get to level 2.
Yeah. Yeah, because he can make you, the restoration totem or whatever.
Resistance idol.
Resistance totem, yeah. Resistance idol. Yeah, so Abathos, like, and I know you've played this combo, but you did it in Torin.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Which brought Fazeel out of God. So Abathos is out of God here. But I don't think that matters a huge amount. Like, I don't think I would Diamond Armor him.
No.
Effigy power would be kind of nice. I know you can Contagion or, like, I've done Weakening Blow a lot with Ankara.
Right.
Which had some value. So so that's what I had. I have one slot left.
I got to say real quick, I do like the Abathos pick here, by the way. For a couple of reasons. One, the AoE curse, that's always solid. But the other thing I like about him is the gravity well.
The no charge thing.
Yeah, you can literally park his ass behind somebody or next to somebody, and you can put somebody in a position where it's cool. I know they really want to charge this person.
Yeah.
So they can, but now they cannot get in there and force Abathos to get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything like that. So I love the amount of, like, board control he gives you even before we start getting into, like, the fact that he has the ability to AoE curse, which triggers the rest of your models like we've talked about.
Yeah, that was kind of the idea. Basically, the idea is I've got kind of layers of combos here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to, like, get rid of...
All of it.
All of it, right? I think still Fazeel's probably a pretty ban-worthy target here.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I can play the Fazeel Abathos situation. But yeah, when it comes to the seventh hero, I've been having some issues debating
what
to put there. The first model that initially came to mind was Sharn.
Okay.
The idea being... out of activation movement is good.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to get behind me and pull back, say, a Fazeel.
Yeah.
You know, or a Mizuzi that overextended a little, the Soul Harvest or any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Hammer Smash is pretty good, but my Warband does look slightly Fate heavy. I think they're going to be pretty commonly wanting to Pestilence or setting up Laser Storms pretty consistently. But I guess if you're not setting them up, you're not super fate heavy there. So the Hammer Smash is pretty good.
Yeah.
It gives me another model with the anti-armor pierce. That's res 2. So you Diamond Armor something. You know, you've got Sharn. So I've got two res 2 models that are anti-armor pierce. Mm-hmm. So depending on what's on the other side of the table, you know, can be a bit problematic. I've also just always really loved Sharn.
Yeah.
I'm playing her a lot in Gruul at the moment. I played her a lot in V1. Hammer Smash mm-hmm. with is just good. Get Behind Me is fantastic. Mm-hmm. She's just a big pain in the ass. So that was my initial thought for a seventh.
Okay.
The other one that kind of was crossing my mind was Styx.
Yep.
So Styx for a couple of reasons. First off, brings Curse. Mm-hmm. So well, brings another...
He brings another... Curse and Stun.
Correct. Yeah, I'm not as worried about Stun, right? So again, it's the layering of Curse, right? So the I curse things, and then Fazeel or Nephanine can utilize that curse.
Right.
Right?
The main reason I bring up Stun, though, right, is it actually, mm-hmm. A, is controlling your opponent's actions.
Yep. Yeah. It's,
and Stun's B, good. Mm-hmm. the bigger one for me is it actually lets you walk away from people as well without taking parting blows.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two nimble models, so I'm not as worried about that part of Stun. Right, so Nephanine and Abathos are both nimble.
Sure.
You know, some of the Res 2 ones might not really care that much. So it was, Stun is good. It's a nice option. But yeah, more the idea was for Curse. It gives you a lot of extra additional positioning, so I can tow my Fazeel back out of trouble. Uh-huh. I can swap stuff into murder range for other things. Not that, but what's weird with that part of it is the fact that this warband can kind of reach out and touch you from a distance.
Yeah.
Fazeel, Nephanine, Abathos all can be pretty, pretty like, hey, you think you're safe, but we can charge more than a normal charges, right? So it kind of changes that. That was kind of my thought of where he might lose some value here. Because I guess if the Marcus gets banned, like, I don't have anything that's that tanky, which is why I was kind of leaning towards the Sharn.
That's fair. Let's be real. If they're banning your Marcus, that means you're getting to go in with a heyday already.
Yeah,
of Fazeel, Masuzi, Nephany.
Yeah.
Okay.
Abathos.
And then take your pick of Abathos and whoever, yeah, or Kane. You know, because, mm-hmm, I mean, realistically, while Abathos is cool, I think he's got a harder part of this combo to pull off, because, mm-hmm, he's got to be within, you know, within so many hexes to be able to drop the Coalesce, mm-hmm, token.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's impossible, right?
Yeah.
But I know the few times that I did, there were times where I did play him where I honestly just couldn't get him into the position I wanted to before a model was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it was harder for me to do that, right?
Okay.
And so that's one of those things that I look at it and go, yeah, your Fazeel might get banned, but not likely. Your Marcus, realistically, I don't think they're going to get banned, because if they do, and they're saying they're playing the ultimate game of chicken with you, and, yeah, you have the warband bonus that goes, cool, I can trade at this pace all day, because if I kill you, I'm just going to keep healing.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's a favorable trade to them.
Mm-hmm.
My honest-to-God opinion is probably Masuzi's probably going to see a ban more often, I think, than anything. Because he's your only Soul Gazer. Okay. And as you mentioned, Masuzi with Diamond Armor is a pain in the ass.
It is an obnoxious... It can be, depending on what you have on...
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, I'm the type of guy that while I love the idea of putting a Soul Gazer in to replace him, I don't think you need one in Tomas, but I think, yeah, having like Styx is one that's near and dear to my heart, because, mm-hmm, he gives me the same thing Sharn does, but better, with, yeah, the aspect of the out of turn movement. He gives me the flexibility of, if I need to pull somebody in, I can throw him out there and do that.
Yeah.
He still brings another layer of curse, like you said, mm-hmm, and he's still res one. So he still benefits from Marcus being in the warband.
That's true.
And last time I checked, and I got to double check this now again. So I'm going to, before I open my damn mouth,
Okay, yeah, and they, because I remember he was Soul Harvest 5 at one point, and they dropped him back down, so that's what I was double-checking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, and
4 is still pretty good.
You know, he's Soul Harvest 4, but he is out of God now.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. But the other thing I like about him is he also has that Nullify ability.
Yeah, Nullify to remove problematic things, right? Mm-hmm. Like a stone form on a Don or whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe it is sticks, because I guess if they do remove the Marcus, you can just play around it.
Yeah.
You know, position-wise with things like Nephanine that can hit and run, Fazeel mm-hmm. that you can, you know, give them, like, you know, Diamond Armor or Agi Boots or something to make them annoying, or Diamond Armor the Mizuzi and kind of use him a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably the sticks. It's probably not bad. It gives me another curse. So, again, another kind of thing to trigger the Fazeel.
Not to mention he's fast as hell, because he's also got dash.
Yeah, the move through with dash is good. Yeah, that throw passes let you do some fun stuff. So, yeah, probably sticks. We'll see. I'm curious how the Marcus band would end up working out, because I don't know who I'd drop. Maybe I drop Abathos then?
I mean, realistically, I think at that point, depending on, A, the monsters on the map and such.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you go, okay, cool, you ban Marcus. I'm bringing Fazeel Misuzi. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring Nephany, who's my assassin.
Yeah.
I bring Styx, so I can still Soul Harvest at a, you know...
Well, and get stuff out of trouble, too.
Right? Soul Harvest, get stuff out of trouble. He's your true support piece. And then it's just a matter of, oh, are the monsters, you know, 1, 2, and 3 soul pits? Okay, whatever, that's fine. Or 1, 2, 3 levels? Fine.
Yeah.
If it's a tier 4... Or you have a tier 4 and a 1, 2, 3 or something like that.
Or there's a lot of pits or something.
Yeah, or there's a lot of pits. Then it's like, cool, we drop Abathos, we bring Kane.
Yeah.
So I think Styx is probably the better choice, in my opinion. But I know how much you love Sharn.
Yeah, I do quite enjoy Sharn. I think I might try this and see.
Yeah.
Because Sharn doesn't get a whole lot from being in God. Like, yeah, you get the 1S on the shield slam, but I don't know.
But the only time she gets that is she's charging him.
Yeah, she's got to charge him. You got to knock him into something, which can be difficult to do mm-hmm. based on, you know, terrain and board position and things of that nature.
Now, that does beg the thing of, if you were going to play this list as a double defender list and constantly be taking both Sharn and Marcus, then you could use things like the wall to set up her shield slam a little bit better.
True. Yep.
You know, so it just kind of depends on how you decide you want to play the list. Mm-hmm. But I think with the way that you've been going with building the list, I think she's good, but I think Styx is a better choice.
Yeah.
Okay. So would your list, let walk through the list one more time for everybody.
So my list ends up being Fazeel, Marcus, Mizuzi, Nephanine, Kane, Abathos, which is out of God, and Styx, that is out of God.
And, yeah, I look at that list and I go, that seems pretty good. So.
Yeah, I feel like there's some good picks for bands. Like, mm-hmm. there's not one super obvious one. Like, obviously, Fazeel's always going to be a pretty good band. Band target, but I think I can play around that, right? There's a lot mm-hmm. of other, like, Nephanine's probably got to get a lot of work done, but there's a lot of ways to curse things, you know, the Abathos and Styx, where you can kind of set some of that up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think if Fazeel gets banned, right, that's where you look at it and you go, Kane probably has to pick up a little bit of slack too.
Yeah.
But you and I have talked about that, and while Kane has a hunter's knife, he's killing some monsters, but on the turns that monsters are respawning or anything like mm-hmm. that, he can be putting in work.
Yeah.
So that's definitely, and the fact that he's also got the mortal wounds, which helps prevent people from healing, that actually lets Nephany do more work over a longer period of time, I think.
Yeah.
Because you can weaken a model, and the person either has to immediately, like, they have to start looking at going, okay, is Kane going next? And if he does, is he A, killing the model, and B,
if he's not killing it, is he mortal woundsing it? So then somebody else in your warband's getting that.
Yeah, the mortal wounds there is a pretty good part of it. I mean, there's a lot of healing. Right? Like, for instance, your warband, right? Obviously, any Ista warband's going to have a lot of...
yeah, I mean, just this one healing. Alone, right? It's got Isabel, it's got Hoxha, Barney has Repair. You know, just those three alone. Donnie's got Regen. So, just in that alone, Mortal Wounds can stop any one of those models from being able to heal.
Yeah. Well, and you can't even get rid of it with Effigy Power, right? Because it's not a condition.
Correct. So, that makes it a problem. Yeah. So yeah, I think I think that's a good solid dojo list. I like the fact that you went more of the curse side on this one, because I think we see a lot of poison lot of the time with Rakir and trying to blow people up in that.
Yeah, Rakir was definitely one I thought about, but my thought was I wanted something a little bit different. I know that I feel like Tomas kind of gets a little bit of, not hate or not. Fasil's going to get banned, and then you've got Rakir, but like he's not the greatest one to deal with monsters. Mm-hmm. So like, especially on this one where there's, you know, tier fours, and then an Inferno, like having your one main damage dealer not be good with monsters. I mean, you have Kane, I guess, to deal with it in this warband specifically, but
right.
To me, just it feels like I want to make sure the monsters are
dying,
can be handled, right? And Rakir just is not a good monster handler.
No, like he's good at what he does when he works, and then when he doesn't, he fails so big it's.
Yeah, and funny. It feels like he's got to spend fate because you want a toxin, and then you don't want to spend fate on a monster kill, and just, yeah.
Exactly. So, well, Wonky, I think that we have dojoed the heck out of this. Mm-hmm. Now we've got a couple of lists to use to test on our map, which I think will be fun. Mm-hmm. Do you have any final thoughts for the night?
No, I think we covered quite a bit already. So
absolutely. So, well, guys, as always, if there are any topics that you would like us to cover, if you have a warband that you would love us to dojo over and give our opinions on, anything on your minds at all, you know, things you'd like us to talk about with maps, please feel free to, you know, pop them into the podcast and streams channel, tag myself or Wonky with it. We'd love to do that. We'd love to hear from you about what, you know, what you would like us to talk about as well. And as always, the game is out there, man. Get out there, play those games, and Wonky, let's portal on out of here.